Looking to transform your family game nights? At Perfectly Picked Games, we specialize in family games that bring everyone closer. Our games aren't just fun. Kids and teens will learn how to take turns, develop basic strategy skills, and understand the thrill of winning and grace of losing. With our exclusive gift of games, you can give months of gaming excitement to your family. Choose a 3-month or 6-month gift, and we'll deliver hand-picked family games to your doorstep every month. And here's the best part. Right now, you can use the promo code GOLDENMOJO and receive 20% off your selected plan. Don't miss out on this exclusive offer. Use promo code GOLDENMOJO and save 20% today at Perfectly Picked Games.
Time to jump into the Wayback Machine and go back to the 80s. I am your host, Golden Jay, and with me, as always, is Frankie Vegas.
Hey.
And we are here to take you back. Back to one of the greatest motherfucking decades ever. Let's get to it.
Let's do it.
Just do it. Was that in the 80s? Was Just Do It in the 80s?
Nike? I don't know. It might have been. I mean, there were Air Jordan back then.
But was Nike's logo, Just Do It, was it in the 80s? This is a question.
I don't know.
I got to learn to spell because I'm going to look it up. It was created by Winland and Kennedy, an advertising agency based in Portland, Oregon, and launched in 1988.
Yeah, hey! It is
80s. Bring it on, 1988 with a little Just Do It.
Just do it.
Wow. I didn't know if it had bled. Oh, obviously, it's bled into the 90s and the 2000s. So, I mean, but I didn't know where
when it oriented. Started. Yeah, where it oriented. Originated, that's the word.
Oh, here we go. The campaign tagline. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Was inspired by the last words of Gary Gilman, a convicted murderer who was executed in 1977. Well, I'm telling you right now, right there, that is something that you pretty much don't want to hang your hat on.
No, but you know what? That was a good final word, man. I gotta applaud him for that.
Yeah, just do it. Just do it. You gotta just do it. Anyway, there you go. Little side hustle from the 1988 advertising campaign of Nike. And listen, Nike, we would be happy to talk more about your products right here on the Golden 80s podcast. Just give us a shout, thegoldenimage80s@gmail.com.
Or you can send Michael Jordan over. We'll talk to him too.
Shit, he could sit down. We could, we can chat a bit. It'll be cool. I mean, I'm sure that we... Oh, fuck. You know what? Michael Jordan walked in and sat down in that chair right
there. We'd have to call Colton.
Oh, I wouldn't call Colton.
Like do a little one-on-one,
I would send selfies of me and MJ together to him, but I wouldn't call him. How fast do you think he could drive? I mean, it's an hour. It's a good hour to his house from here.
Yeah.
How fast could Colton drive to get here in time to meet MJ before he left?
Let's see. I've done Warsaw to Fort Wayne in 20 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Even through the big Columbia City?
Yeah.
Brave man.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'll ask you later why you had to get there in such a heated...
Young and stupid.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. There you go. There you go.
Simple answer.
We are all have all been there. That's for damn sure. Oh, man.
got a lot of things that have happened on the Golden 80s, and we hope you guys are enjoying it. You know, we had Danny B from the 1985, the crossover with the Call Guys, some Outsiders, you know, coming at you, one of our favorite movies. After we recorded that, I found it on TV, so I had to watch it again. What an amazing movie. Anything else been happening with you, Frankie?
You know, not really. Nothing. Just been working a lot, and that's about it, really.
How is the new job working? I mean, oh, it's not really a new job.
It's not really a new job, but a full-time.
Right, right.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. I've had fun. Good. And am I echoing? Do I sound like I'm echoing?
Not in my headphones. Okay.
It just sounded like I was echoing in mine.
Yeah. Just pick on me about the last Tusop that came out that had an echo. I get what you're going for.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little paranoid now.
I get it. I understand it. Yeah,
but that's okay.
It's all good.
But yeah. No, I don't. I'm trying to think. I did have something for Uncle Frankie Corner, though.
All right. You want to do that now?
No, by the time this comes out.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure, you know, a lot of info will come out. I'm sure arrests have already been made, I know, but more will for the Kansas City shooting during the parade.
God. Yeah.
Okay. Now, Golden Jay pretty much said what I wanted to say on Tusop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys are freaking idiots. There is a special place in hell.
Mm-hmm.
If it was up to me, I don't know what Missouri laws are, but the fact that a child was even hurt.
Absolutely.
That you should be thrown in a cell somewhere and forgotten about.
Absolutely.
Open a little slot, put your food in there, change underwear every couple weeks.
I wouldn't even put the food in there.
Yeah, you know, fuck them. But, you know, if you want to go out, like Jeremy was saying, if you want to go out and shoot each other up, go find an empty alley, an empty parking lot. Take yourselves out of this world. Could we be better off without it? And I don't mean to offend the people's families that of the perpetrators, because it's not you. It's your members of your family that did this are assholes. And that's just the way it is. And you have to accept that. You know, you can support them and still be there for them. But as far as I'm concerned, I hope they rot in hell for what they did. You know, how many kids was it, Jeremy, that got hurt?
It was 11, the last that I heard.
Yeah, I mean, 11 kids that were just there celebrating their Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl win. And you took that away from them.
Well, yeah, I mean, let alone the fact that they got shot. I mean, that is the big get here. But I don't know that people understand the trauma that now they have caused these young children for the rest of their life.
Yeah, because something that was supposed to be a memorable moment
and
fun.
Yeah.
Now they're going to associate it with one of the worst days of their lives.
Yeah.
You know, and that just, you're an asshole for that.
Absolutely.
And like I said, I hope you're rotten hell. You know, for all you little gangbangers out there, whatever you want to call yourselves. You want to take each other out? Go where there's no innocent people. Take each other out. Do away with yourself. Save up the time.
And the tax money. Yeah, that's always my biggest thing is like, you know, we got these guys locked up who actually should be executed. And we're worrying about whether we can rehab them and put them back into society. And it's like, it doesn't fucking matter because the trauma that they have caused other human beings. Now, whether they kill somebody, it'd be the trauma for the family.
Yeah.
You know, if they shoot somebody and the trauma for these kids in the rest of their lives or whatever, it's not worth it. I mean, to keep them around to try to rehab them, they've caused more havoc and stuff like that that is not worth a rehab. Now, for years, I've kind of teetered on that line. It's a very tall fence to try to balance yourself on as far as do you want to do you want to help people try to make themselves better? You know, will they come back and be a better part of society? You know, if it was you and it was an accident, but nobody ever thought it was an accident, you know, there's always these different throws, you know, different things you can throw in this giant basket and, you know, swap around and try to think about this, that, and the other. And everybody's got an opinion on it. And I get it. And I respect it. Mine is that in the moment where you commit a crime so heinous like this one, or, you know, there's many, many more. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know why we ever kept Charlie Manson alive for so long in prison. I mean, look what he reveled in it. Mm-hmm. You know, he got famous from it. And
I think it because with him, I think it was because he was kind of in murky water because he didn't technically do a damn thing.
Technically.
You know.
Technically, he didn't pull the trigger, no, quote unquote.
He went and told people to do it, yeah. But, you know, you got free will. You don't have to do anything.
Right.
You know. Yeah, but I'm glad they kept him. At least they kept him in prison. You know,
right,
he didn't
right.
get out.
Yeah, he never got.
Today he'd probably get out on a technicality. You know,
somebody would stir that muddy water and they would get him out of there. But yeah, but you know what I'm saying. We keep all these murders and pedophiles and all this stuff in our prison system, where all they do is, you know, sit in a cell all day long, read books, eat meals and go work out. And I mean, listen, people, I've never been in prison. I don't really know exactly what goes on in prison, and I don't ever fucking want to know. I never want to be a prisoner or a prison guard. Those are two things that are never going to be on my bucket list. So I don't know exactly what, but it just seems like we're paying for these people to stay prisons. And, we have a lot of, I know that it's become muddy waters when it comes to marijuana, you know, legal in some states, not legal in other states, you know, but the charges, if anybody was ever carrying and was doing time for possession of drugs and marijuana, why are they still in there? You know, is it really that big of a deal to begin with, but let alone if the state now legalizes it, and are they letting these people go, even though that they were in trouble prior to the legalization of it? I mean, there's just so much, man. It hurts my fucking brain.
It does. It's.
But I, from my understanding, two arrests have been made. One of those arrests has been charged with the murder of. That the female DJ, mm-hmm. and I super apologize. I've heard her name several times. I cannot think of it right off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
That charges have been made to one of those two people who actually they know pulled the trigger and was the one that shot and killed her. So it's just now kind of a waiting game to see what happens from there. So. But yeah, what a great day ruined by couple of motherfuckers that need to die.
Oh yeah, that's why I said. That's why I said the fact that a child was hurt, that should be automatic in my book. That you get to go bye bye, and we don't get to hear from you again.
Listen, the fact that there was a shooting in the vicinity of Taylor Swift's boyfriend. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. Hey, and let me tell you what. And if anybody wants to help out, there is all sorts of GoFundMe pages. Yep. I believe the Build Mafia has got something going on. Kansas City Chiefs have got something going on.
The Bills Mafia is working towards.
I believe I had read where they had teamed up with the Chiefs and.
Oh, that's fucking awesome!
And doing something.
I'll tell you what, and I know this isn't Indiana Chiefs fans, but. The interaction that Jason Kelce had with the Bills Mafia, and the Bills Mafia makes it sound like it's something horrible, and it's not. It's I have met a lot of the Bills Mafia group, and they are honestly amazing fucking people, and I had a lot of fun hanging out with them. But the interaction that Jason Kelce had with them in Buffalo during that game has really kind of I mean, it's kind of solidified a little bit of a little bit more love that the Bills have for the Chiefs and the Chiefs have for the Bills, and doing what he does best, and I'm talking about Jason. He is starting to bring all that together, and the Bills Mafia fucking loves Jason Kelce. Even though he plays for a different team, they fucking love him, and the things that he is doing, like on New Heights when he talks about him and all that kind of stuff is just, it's crazy to me, but I love it. And I'm happy to see it because I mean, in all the football community, I don't care who you root for. I mean, we all love football. I mean, you know, I've known Frankie for a long time and Frankie has been a diehard Colts fan for a long, long time. And
yes, sir.
And I don't like the Colts. I'm not a fan of, but I respect that Frankie, that's his team and that's who he loves. And I will give him jabs and shit from time to time. But, yeah, I gotta respect the fans and the teams that they love. And
to that I'll say, just go check the Kansas City and Indianapolis win-loss records. One-on-one.
Let's not go there. Let's really not go in that deep. Listen, man, I've been a Chiefs fan for a long time, and I dread when I look at a schedule and see that we are playing the Colts because the Colts just have our number. You know, I have a fun saying that came from Nick Wright, you know, the sports broadcaster, where he talks about Kansas City is like, our worst team could beat your best team. And I don't care where the Colts are at, whether they got Peyton Manning at the helm and Marvin Harrison on wide receiver. And they could have, what's your guys' the running back you guys have right now that is amazing?
Taylor?
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor. Yeah. They could have that lineup and just be tearing through the NFL. They could be the worst team ever with, say, I don't know, Jeff George. I can't remember all the old teams. They always seem to figure out how to beat the Chiefs. And for a lot of years, it was our ending in the playoffs. The last few years, when we have met them, we've taken care of them in the playoffs, but...
Now, in the defense of the Chiefs, more times than not, the Colts don't beat the Chiefs. The Chiefs beat the Chiefs.
Brody Croyle was a quarterback when I was actually in Indianapolis to watch a game for the Kansas City versus Indy. And believe me, we couldn't do nothing right. It was the horrible, horrible offensive game. We just got smoked. And that is the normal when we play the Colts. So... hey, it is what it is. I dread it. So when we do beat them, it's a pretty big deal. It's like our Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know this is a few weeks out from the parade and all that stuff going. But if you want to donate, there are several places. Just Google out and United Way is doing a thing, and like Frankie said, lots of GoFundMe. It's never going to be enough at this point. So,
but I didn't mean to bring a downer into it. I just wanted to touch on it.
I
wanted to say my piece.
Absolutely.
So let's get on to something a little more fun.
All right, Frankie, what do you got for me?
Oh, for the question of the pod,
80s edition.
Okay. I got to get back on the right track.
Get on the right track.
Attack something fun. Get on the train here. Okay. So what we're talking about today is a supergroup.
Supergroup.
And in that supergroup.
Supergroup.
Who is your favorite artist?
The supergroup. Oh, that's fucking easy. Hands fucking down. Huey Lewis.
Absolutely.
Is that yours?
Yes.
Huey Lewis was my go-to as a kid. I grew up listening to Huey Lewis. I have never got to see him in concert, and I never will now because he's not playing live anymore because of his hearing. Mm-hmm. And I missed an opportunity, and I will kick myself for a long, long time that I didn't take it to go see him. But Huey Lewis in the News was my go-to for a long, long, long time. So,
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love his parts of the song we're going to talk about. And just, I started listening to
And an interesting fact that I didn't know about Yui's part coming up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That, I didn't know that either. But yeah, we'll get there. Yeah, we're getting you all curious, wondering what we're talking about. But yeah. Yeah, it got me listening to Huey Lewis again. So
nice.
I've been talking to Jeremy about a future episode.
Yeah, would you guys like to hear a Huey Lewis in the News episode? Hit us up, thegoldenimage80s@gmail.com.
Yeah. So, Jeremy, what are we talking about today?
Well, Frankie, today we are talking about a charity single originally recorded by a supergroup, USA for Africa, in 1985, written by Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie, produced by the legendary Quincy Jones and Michael Armani for the album We Are the World. That's right. We're talking about We Are the World.
We are the world.
Oh, here he goes. He's getting a Stevie Wonder on. He's back and forth. You don't really have to close your eyes for that, but you know.
I don't got my sunglasses on. So.
Oh. Okay, so a few episodes ago, we definitely talked about Do They Know It's Christmas?
Yes.
I think that was our Christmas episode.
Yeah, that was one of our Christmas episodes, yes.
Yes. So if you remember, they called that was Band-Aid, brought together by, hold on, his name is escaping me. I know it. Yeah. It's Bob Gandalf.
Or, yeah, it's Gandalf.
Yeah. Gandalf, yeah. So Band-Aid brought together, you know, by Bob, brought all the UK performers together. And so Harry Belafonte now has the big idea, let's do this, you know, in America for Africa relief, because he had spent some time down there, you know, doing his missionary work in Africa and seeing what I think at one point I heard 7 bags of rice for 17,000 people or something to that effect. Do you remember hearing that?
It's something to that. I can't remember the exact.
Well, here's the deal, ladies and gentlemen. So Frankie emails me, and we've already talked about we're going to do this, and he emails me or texts me a few days ago and says, hey, listen, there's this brand new fucking documentary on Netflix about the making of this song. So I stayed up till like 1 a.m. finishing this off because, you know, everything else I got going on, and I wanted to make sure I watched this, and I couldn't break myself away from it. So if you go to Netflix and check out We Are the World, USA for Africa documentary. Yeah. Fucking amazing. So that's what we're going to talk about.
Called The Greatest Night in Pop.
There you go. That is what we're going to talk about right here. So Harry Belafonte decides he wants to do the American version to help the African famine relief. Ken Cregan becomes a very key component in this deal. Ken Cregan starts with Harry Belafonte. They start, you know, kind of workshopping this idea of doing this. And basically they call up three individuals. They call up Michael Jackson. They call up Lionel Richie, because both of them right at this time, because this was 1985, were some of the biggest pop stars, you know, going.
Yeah.
Lionel Richie with a little, what, All Night Long. All Michael Night Jackson Long. With the Thriller.
Yeah, I think was just coming out, I think.
I think you're right, yeah. And they tell Lionel, get a hold of Stevie Wonder. So I thought it was interesting as shit. Lionel's calling him. And, of course, now remember, everybody, this is 1985. There was no cell phones. You know, you couldn't text him. It was like, hey, you know, not that Stevie would have been able to read it, but I'm sure he had talked to text people. He just hit the little okay button. I got a text, and it's like, Lionel Richie, you want to help us write a song? Anyway, fucking Stevie Wonder wouldn't call him back. How long did he wait for him?
I can't remember exactly how, but it was a while. They just finally, him and Michael just said, fuck it. We're going to write the damn song.
Yeah. So Michael and Lionel get together, which, which I thought was interesting as shit too, because Lionel goes to Michael's house. Right? Are you with me? You know where I'm going with this? So he goes to Michael's house to write this song. Now, at this point, they have no timeline. They're just like, they need a song. Quincy Jones is like, I need a song, you know, because Cregan and Belafonte called up Quincy and said, we need you to produce this. And Quincy's like, boom, I'm on it. Quincy's like, I need a song. And they're like, oh, we're workshopping it. They're getting together. I love the old tape recorder, record, play, bullshit. And they're not getting anything. They kind of know the rhythm, the kind of beat that they want to go with, but they don't really have anything solid. Meanwhile, Cregan, Belafonte, and Jones are all like, we want these superstars. And they're making phone calls and, you know, different stuff like that. And how are you going to get, because they had it was a laundry list.
Oh, yeah.
It was a laundry list, which included like Prince and Springsteen and Billy Joel and, obviously Stevie Wonder was on that list to do, even though he can't pick up a phone and call a brother back, I guess. But
he couldn't find it.
Oh, it was over in the corner where it's always at. So they're trying to figure out how to get everybody in. You laughing at yourself on that one.
I like that.
They're trying to get everybody in one spot, and how they're going to do this, especially with everybody all over the world. Some of them are still touring, like Springsteen was still touring and stuff like that. And then it came to their attention. You want to talk about this?
Oh, yeah. They finally decided how can they get everybody together? And they thought, at the time, the AMAs were huge.
And who was hosting the AMAs?
Lionel.
Oh, I forgot to mention they were at his fucking house. And of course, he's like, Lionel, you want to talk to Bubbles? Because the fucking chimp is there. And Lionel's like, no, I don't fucking know. And then he's like, hears something in the corner going, ah, and a fucking snake comes rolling out. It's like, oh, Lionel, he was wanting to come out and say hi to you. He wants to meet you, Lionel. That's Michael and his giant fucking snake that he's got. He lost his snake in the fucking house. Oh, it's amazing. But anyways, so Lionel's doing the AMAs.
Yeah, and so they thought, okay, everybody's going to be there. Mm-hmm. Now a couple exceptions. Springsteen had to fly in.
Was he in Australia or?
No, he was. He was, I think, in Philadelphia doing his final show of that tour, that leg of the tour, that he was doing, and so he didn't flew in for just that. Which one was it? Dionne Warwick. She was in Vegas performing, so she had to fly in after her performance. Which, you know, Vegas to L.A. is nothing.
Yeah, nothing, but...
I've done it, you know.
I've done Vegas to L.A.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you're not even up in the air before you start going back down.
Yeah, right.
That's another topic.
If you want to hit that Mile High Club, you have a very slim chance.
Very slim. But anyway, so they got everybody that agreed to do it, you know. And then some, because they had to turn people away, you know, saying, you know, they allowed like 49 people is how many they let come in.
Right.
And so, you know, after the, and it was kept secret.
Oh, my God. You know, it was funny because they sent the letters and the demo tapes out, and they had to retract where it was at on the letters so nobody would find out.
Yeah. So it was just like, because they didn't want anybody to get a hold of it, a copy of it,
right,
and start playing it on the radio before they were ready.
Right.
So everything had to be top secret, you know, so. And I still can't remember where they recorded it. I know they said, but.
They showed the sign fucking 20 times.
Yeah.
It was like A&M Records.
Yeah, something like that. So, you know, everybody just started pulling up in there and, you know, because they didn't want, the reason they didn't want people to know, another reason was, you know, if you get pull up in your limo and there's hundreds of people standing around you, Michael Jackson's not getting out, you know. If Prince would have showed up, he wasn't getting out, you know.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. That's why they wanted to keep it, because they did not want to get
a big crowd.
Yeah, exactly. Although, honestly, the crowd was still pretty fucking big from the video. So, so anyways, so they picked the AMA date.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be there. After the AMAs, they head over to
the studio.
Yeah. Oh, shit. So the dates, I lost my track of where I was at. The date was picked. The problem with that is it only gave them like 10 days to get everything kind of put together.
Yeah, very short period of time. You know, I don't even think they had the song finished at the time.
No, they didn't. So here's Quincy getting a hold of Lionel and Michael. We need the song now. This is what it is. We need it yesterday because we want to send out all this stuff to the artists who are going to sing on it, who have agreed to it. And so, Michael and Lionel start pounding it out and getting it done. And they record it. They get a demo of it. And I think it was just straight up Michael singing it.
Yeah, I believe, it was just Michael. Yeah.
Now, that was something else interesting, too. Lionel talked about the fact that Michael never played an instrument. All he did was like, boom, boom, ba-da-da-da, boom, boom, ba-da-dum, boom, ba-da-dum, boom, boom, boom. And he just had miles and miles of cassette tapes with just these ideas that he hummed out, basically. Yeah. So I thought that was really fucking cool.
Yeah, and he had ended up, I think he went into the studio a lot earlier than everybody else and done all his solo parts.
He
and
did.
And got him out, you know, and everybody else kind of had to come in and play catch up, you know.
Well, not necessarily catch up. I mean, they kind of knocked that out early because they knew, he wasn't going to the AMAs. Michael Jackson wasn't going to the AMAs. He's like, fuck you. I got other shit to do over here. It's more important. So he just came in, helped get the sound check, get that stuff dialed in, and then was able to actually record some of his stuff prior to. But he still, and you'll find this out when we get to a little bit, well, I'll say it now, but he actually recorded a section where it broke into Huey Lewis's and Cyndi Lauper and Kim Cattrall's section.
Yeah.
He had a lead in to what they called the bridge, I think is what they called it. But so he was actually still out there singing in front of everybody. It wasn't like he was being shy and you know, like we all know Michael to be, but so here you have 47, 49 major artists all standing in a room and nobody fucking else is allowed in there. None of their assistants, none of their managers, nothing. Hit the fucking road.
Yep. Sign up above the door, said check your ego at the door.
Yep, absolutely. Apparently Stevie Wonder forgot to see the sign. Fuck. I don't really have any ill will towards Stevie Wonder, but watching this just drove me nuts.
Oh, yeah.
Just somebody smacked a spit out of his mouth and tell him to shut up.
I'm like, you had your chance to write the damn song and you wouldn't answer your damn phone.
Yeah. Well,
you're trying to put your Swahili in there. And
and they said even when he got there, he's like, okay, let's write this thing. And they're like, no, song's already written. Oh, well, why didn't anybody call me? But there was just a few times in that video where I'm like, this motherfucker needs to go to the corner. But there was other times where it was like he kind of brought everything together. Yeah. The whole Dylan and Stevie Wonder piece of that video was absolutely amazing to watch and just almost tear-jerking to a point, because once again, you have all these artists. And we're going to talk about these artists. We probably need to get to that there relatively soon. But we have all these artists and all of these famous, amazing singers. And I don't think Bob Dylan has a ton of confidence in himself. You know what I'm saying? Even though he is the amazing artist that he is. And if you love him, you love him. If you hate him, you hate him. I mean, it's just the way it is. But, I mean, he did what he did. And
it looked like he didn't know where he was, though, and that whole thing's like,
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Where am I?
But he needed, he pulled Stevie Wonder off to the side and because, can you just play this on the piano with me and so I can help figure out where I'm at? And him and Stevie Wonder sat over at the fucking piano and worked out his part, mm-hmm. you know, to exactly, so he knew exactly what he was doing. I found it mind-numbing. And this is kind of a, you know, a bad thing for this side of it, but I found it mind-numbing that these artists didn't know how to do their parts, that they had to have so much instruction to sing these one fucking lines, or, you know, the harmony stuff, I get it, like with the Yui part, you know, he's just trying to find that harmony, but they threw that at him at the very last second. But some of these artists, like Dylan, and there was a couple other ones that it was like, they had to talk him through, like 10, 15 minutes, talk him through. You've heard the song. You've listened to the demo. You've already done all the choruses and all that stuff because they did all that stuff first yeah. so they could let some of these people go who weren't doing the solos in the song. And so you got the idea of how the song is arranged and it's in your head. How are you not just walking up and saying, these are my lines? I mean, I know, I understand two, three takes mm-hmm. to get it just exactly how you want it, but it seemed like that shit drug on forever and they just could not get their mind wrapped around how they were supposed to be singing these songs.
No, as a musician, you've been in bands. Mm-hmm. How many times do you need to go over a song before you get it?
Listen, okay, so here's the deal.
Even though you've heard the song maybe 100 times.
You spotting me here, Frankie Vegas? Listen, I can tell you how I work. When Guilt 4 was writing their album, we had 20 plus songs. We rehearsed those songs. And, you know, there was never a time where I didn't tweak something vocally a little bit along the way. It's like, oh, yeah, I want that a little bit better. But these are whole entire songs. Yeah. These are not one lines in one song. When Guilt 4 ended and me and Brad Hargrave started Crankshaft Glory, we would record one song in every Friday night. We had a new song, no concept, no idea. We come in, we get an idea, and by the time we walked out of the studio, we had a complete song completely recorded. And that is writing lyrics.
Wow.
So
impressive.
So that being said, you know, it can go either way. But these are professional musicians that should have that down. That's all I'm saying. I couldn't wrap my mind around the fact that they had to be, you know, spoon-fed what they were supposed to do. It's like, man, come in, do your thing. I understand that Quincy and Lionel have an idea of what it's supposed to be, but damn.
Well, but you look at, you know, a Bob Dylan. He's a totally different type of musician than a Michael Jackson or a Stevie Wonder or a Lionel Richie, you know, or most of these people, you right. know. So it was different, you know.
I'll give you Bob Dylan because it was absolutely 100% different. But all the other artists in there. And then you have fucking artists like Steve Perry, Daryl Hall, and there was one other one in that group. Do you remember what the third one was? Kenny Loggins, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
They just walked up to the mic and fucking ripped it, and it was amazing. Right. You know, but it's just, I don't know. I'm like I said, I'm not picking on anybody. Yeah. I just don't understand.
Oh, no. You know, we were, you know, joking about Stevie Wonder, but the dude's a musical genius.
Actually, he's an amazing singer-songwriter and stuff like that. Like I said, I just was really bummed that he just kind of come in thinking he was going to take control of the whole thing. And I was like, really? You had your opportunity. You wouldn't return a phone call. You knew what was going on. Why wouldn't you return that phone call? Now, whether it's his fault or his management's fault, I mean, there you have that. But you could take that in consideration too. Mm-hmm. All right, my man, let's go over some of this. Let's go over the soloist in this In this amazing song.
Okay. The first, this is in order of appearance. The first one is Lionel Richie.
Lionel. That's so wrong.
But I laughed my ass off.
Absolutely, you did.
And then we had Stevie Wonder. And Paul Simon. I'm kind of pausing, like, if you want to say something about either.
No.
Kenny Rogers.
Oh, man. Okay, so I will stop there and say something about Kenny Rogers. Once again, grew up a Kenny Rogers huge fan. The Gambler, you know, Coward of the County.
Oh, yeah, great songs.
To watch this documentary and to hear his voice again, you know, it was just like, oh, man, he was so silky smooth.
Oh, yeah. He was, man.
Yeah.
Then there was, after him, with James Ingram. Mm. And then You Better Be Good to Her, Tina Turner.
You better be good to me. Oh.
Damn. That woman just got better looking the older she got.
God. She had legs that went right up to her ass.
Oh, yeah. Yes, she did. Then there was Billy Joel, the Piano Man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He looked really uncomfortable. Yeah. In the videos that I saw. He just looked like, I'm just here. Just tell me what to do, and we'll get through this.
Am I getting paid for this?
Yeah. No.
Then there was Michael Jackson, you know, probably the person that's probably the first person you think of when you think of We Are the World.
Absolutely.
And then, of course.
The great Diana Ross.
Diana Ross. Yes. And then her buddy, Dionne Warwick. Mm-hmm. And then there with Willie.
Now, think about this a minute. Dionne Warwick into Willie Nelson. And you're like, wait a minute. Really? Really? It fucking worked. And it worked really well.
Oh, yeah. They put this together so good. Because, I mean, this was a specific. They had this put in a specific order. Singing.
And it was, there was a producer that actually sat down and listened to every artist who, you know, was going to be singing on this. And they worked it. He went through and worked it out. So he'd listen to Steve Perry. He would listen to Tina Turner. He'd listen to Michael Jackson, Dionne Warwick. I mean, listening to their albums and then piecing it together is like, well, this voice will work well with this voice. You know, the octave or the range.
They're
going to
stand here and this one's going to stand here. Yep. Yeah, it was a big thing.
It was
an undertaking.
Yeah, so Willie. And then there was the next guy. Which I'd have thrown out of this fucking deal.
Al Jarreau?
Yeah. He was drunk as shit when it came to doing his own part. And then he's like celebrating, like, oh, this song is great. Bring in another bottle of wine. And then by the time he got up there, he was so fucking snockered. I don't even know how they got a really good take out of him. But I'm like, fucking just let's send this guy out. He must have been really good friends with Quincy Jones.
He must have been. And then the next guy, the boss,
the king.
Bruce Springsteen.
My God.
The worst. I can't do that. That just like, that hurts.
I know, right?
Trying to do Springsteen.
And then here comes this next batch that I was talking about.
Kenny Loggins, Mr. 80 soundtrack himself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he was. I think did he play like on every soundtrack in the 80s?
Pretty much.
Yeah. And then there was after him was Steve Perry, one of the amazing voices of music. Daryl Hall, from Hall & Oates, another amazing voice. And then the man, Huey Lewis.
Oh,
the heart of rock and roll.
The heart of rock and roll. Then you went in with Cyndi Lauper.
Cyndi Lauper. Which that was like her story. It was, they were like, do we want her or we want Madonna?
You know? Yeah, that's true.
And they went with Cyndi because I think they just thought.
Madonna
was rather new at the time still.
Yeah, but I think that it come down to the fact that It's like, we can get Cindy. I don't think we're going to get Madonna.
They don't know because they never ask her.
Well, that could be. But
and then Cindy was bitching during the AMA, and her boyfriend, she come up and, my boyfriend said this ain't going to be a hit.
Right.
Is that going to be a problem?
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine she was quite the diva back in the day.
Then they're after Cindy, which, you know, with nothing against Cindy. She's brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
She does.
Absolutely.
Kim Carnes. What'd she do? Betty Davis Eyes. Yep. Was that the song she did? Yeah, that's the only thing I know by her.
Shit, she's got.
It was a big song, so.
She probably has more songs than you might even imagine.
Oh, I'm sure. I can't remember.
Don't Fall in Love with a Dreamer Kenny Rogers. Oh, yeah. Mistaken Identity. Betty Davis Eyes, and Invisible Hands. And it says something about the Flashdance original soundtrack from the motion picture.
Okay.
So she must have worked on that whole album.
Oh, I want to go back to Huey Lewis real quick. I forgot to mention why he had a solo.
Oh, yeah.
He originally did not have a solo.
Nope.
That part was written for Prince,
yeah.
And when they finally come to the conclusion, okay, he's just not going to show up, Michael asked, I believe, who did he ask? Kenny Loggins. Yeah, Kenny Loggins. Well, who do you recommend? Mm. And he said Huey Lewis. So they went over and said, hey, Michael wants to talk to you. Went to Huey.
Yeah, it's oh shit, what do I do now?
Fuck, I'm going to get kicked off the damn
floor. I'm going to the principal's office.
So he went over there, they worked out the arrangement, and he sang Prince's part, and probably better than what Prince probably, well, I shouldn't say that.
Nah,
I don't
you never know.
But. But yeah, but it worked.
And Prince is such a mysterious person.
Yeah.
That's the easiest thing. I mean, he's very antisocial. He always was antisocial. Mm-hmm. And this was too much for him. I don't think he could have done it. And we're going to talk about this this other person that came was just in the chorus.
Yeah.
But it was Sheila E. And she was just starting to come up. And she's actually in the documentary.
Yeah.
And she talks about how she kind of felt a little used, mm-hmm. that they brought her in to try to get Prince to show up. Yeah. And she called him. She said, you should get down here. This is pretty great shit.
And she knew he wasn't going to because he doesn't like crowds.
Right.
He did volunteer to come in, do a guitar solo in another room.
Right.
They wouldn't do it.
No. To be fair, I mean, look at this. Let's finish out the list.
Okay.
Kim Carnes.
Bob Dylan.
Obviously, we talked about Dylan and his.
And Ray Charles.
Oh, my God. The really great Ray Charles.
Oh, yeah. And that was the last of the soul. Which I got a problem. Harry Belafonte. It was his idea, his brainchild, his baby. And he doesn't get a solo?
You know, he probably.
Maybe he didn't want one. I don't know.
He probably said, let's look at the talent that we have here. Billy Joel, Tina Turner, Michael Jackson, Diana Ross. I'm okay sitting back here and singing in the chorus.
That's true. Okay. Well, okay. So the chorus. Okay. We got to talk about this one. Dan Aykroyd. Do you know why Dan was there?
I do not.
Dan was there because he was in a meeting looking for a money manager or an account manager.
Uh-huh.
Well, the one he went to was a mistake, and it was a talent manager. He didn't need a talent manager.
Okay.
But the talent manager says, hey, who happened to be involved with this, We Are the World, said, hey, there's a group of them getting together to do this whole, and gave him the spiel.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, since you're in town, why don't you go ahead and just show up? And so he did.
Nice.
You know, because forever, till I seen her read on it, I always wondered, what the hell is Dan Aykroyd doing up there?
I didn't even notice him in the video, to be 100% honest. I didn't even notice it. And when I'm reading this list, I'm like, Dan Aykroyd, I don't remember seeing him in there. But, man, what a crazy turn of events.
Yeah. But like, hey, that, you know, whatever. But, yeah, so, but he was there.
Yep.
And he didn't get a solo.
Nah, it's all right. Neither did Harry Belafonte.
Harry Belafonte.
Or Lindsey Buckingham.
Who is from?
Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I don't know who doesn't know that. I mean, there might be somebody out there who doesn't know that.
Colton.
Wow.
Mario Capellani.
Capellina.
Let's run over these other ones too. So there's Mario, Johnny Cola, Bill Gibson, Chris Hayes. Dear Lord, let me bow right now. Chris Hayes and Sean Hopper, all from Huey Lewis and the News. They just came just to sing in the background. Didn't do anything else. I want to cover all those before we threw in Sheila E.
And Bob Geldof.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's Sheila E., who was kept getting promised that she had a solo.
Yeah.
And she never got it.
Like I said, she thought she was being used for
Prince.
And
I think she might have been.
Now, she laughed, though. She laughed after all that kind of fellow, when they took it and gave it to Huey, and then she's like, hey, I think I might be getting used, and Prince is not really going to be here. So, yeah, we got all this chorus shit done. I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Yep. And then we get down to Bob Geldof, who was the founder of Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he thought it was important for himself to get involved in this one.
His speech when he really put everybody in check of why they were there, and the whole Band-Aid idea and how this is kind of the next gen of that, the American generation of that. So I think it really put a good thought process in there in that when he made that speech when everybody first got there.
Yeah.
And then you get into the Jacksons. Holy Jesus.
Yeah. Jackie, LaToya, Marlon, Randy, Tito.
Randy Jackson?
Randy. Not that Randy Jackson.
Oh, okay.
Not American Idol Randy Jackson. Dog.
All right, dog.
That could be a no for me, dog.
Let me know, dog. No, dog.
You just ain't ready, man.
Yeah, it's you. I thought that was LaToya in one of the shots, and I'm like, oh, I guess I didn't realize the whole that she was there. And there's no Janet though. What the hell? No Janet. Looking at my Janet?
I think at that time she didn't want to be involved in anything that had
Michael
that had the Jackson name.
I can understand
unless
that.
It was just her name.
Still your brothers and your sisters. Come on, Janet. Janet, you looking at my Janet?
Okay, then we get to Waylon Jennings, which the story with Waylon that I found hilarious is he walked out.
He did.
Yeah.
They were working on some filler stuff with the chorus of the filler.
Yeah, where Stevie was wanting to do some Swahili stuff. Yeah. And he made the cut. He turned. I can't remember who he turned to, but Waylon turned and said, "Well, I don't think they've ever heard a good old boy do Swahili."
Yeah, and then they show the video of him just walking off the fucking risers and walking out the door.
But he did come back.
Did he come back?
He did come back.
I was just mad respect. He's like, "Okay, you want me to sing? I need to sing in Swahili. Fuck you guys. I'm out." And then you get to this next woman, and this is the one that I couldn't believe didn't have a solo.
Yeah,
out of everybody.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Bette Midler. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, can we replace Al Jarreau with Bette Midler and just make the world better? I'm sorry, man.
Yeah. She probably would have got it quicker than he did.
Fuck yeah, but you know
it. But, it must have been something in his voice that they liked at that particular point of the song.
That's a pro.
I don't know. But yeah, I like Bette. I think Bette Midler should have had a solo.
Absolutely.
Along with the next guy, John Oates.
I don't know about that.
I'm being kidding. I don't think I've ever heard.
I don't think so, Frankie.
I don't think I've ever heard John Oates sing solo.
Didn't he do a solo album?
I'm sure he did. Yeah. I didn't hear it.
Yeah, nobody heard it.
Everybody knows who everybody knows who Hall and Oates is, but they know who Daryl Hall is.
Exactly. Yeah, John Oates was there, and he's always been that counterpart to Daryl Hall, he's
what
amazing.
Andrew Rigby was
to George Michael. Absolutely.
Well, I always heard a joke back in the day after Daryl went solo and George Michael went solo that Hall and Oates and Wrigley should have got together and called themselves the other guys.
The other Oates and Wrigley. Wrigley Oates.
Wrigley Oates.
Wrigley and Oates.
But yeah. And then after him with Jeffrey Osborne.
Right.
And then the Pointer Sisters, which I can't believe, like, yeah. Anita didn't have a solo.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, she's, no.
Anita, June, and Ruth from Ruth Pointer. The Pointer Sisters, yeah.
And then another guy, Smokey Robinson.
Yep.
He must have not have got a solo because he didn't want one.
That would be the only thing you'd think of. Yeah. That's the only way that could happen. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, there's your chorus. I mean, that list right there, ladies and gentlemen, is just, at this point, 1985, this was the top of the heap.
And the chorus people themselves would have made a major.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
You could have done two songs and then just use this side and then use the other side. Maybe not Dan Aykroyd. I don't know. Maybe he can sing, but.
Well, he did the Blues Brothers. I'm a soul man.
That's a good point. Good point. Good point.
I mean, I know of more John Belushi than him.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. All right. So, how much? Okay. So,
did you want to go through the instrumental player?
Nah, because I didn't know anybody in that list. Either. Yeah. No offense to those guys. They're probably all session players, and they're probably all amazing in their own
right. And they've probably done amazing things.
Yeah, but I don't know any of these names. So let's just bump onto that, because I want to get to the fact that in this documentary, they did interview the lighting guy, the guy who was kind of heading up the whole lights and different stuff like that. And he was like, as the night was finishing up, because I was putting together my invoice, and somebody looks at him and goes, yeah, listen, this is all volunteer. Nobody got paid anything for showing up to this thing, including lights and sound. All those guys that did all that work in the actual studio and all that stuff, they didn't get paid for it. They did everything volunteer.
Yeah. Now, were they not told that?
Obviously the light guy wasn't, because he said he was putting it together at the end of the night.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean,
March 7th, 1985. So AMAs, did they give a date on when the AMAs were for that? I missed it. We just kind of talked over top of it.
They did, but I can't remember what the date was. Because it says when it was recorded.
The final night of recording was held on January 28th, 1985, at the A&M Recording Studios in Hollywood.
Yes.
And then on March 7th, 1985, so the turnaround, this is why they did this all in one night, because they wanted to, for starters, get everybody there, but they wanted the turnaround to be quick. We Are the World was released, and they did it. In what's the word I'm looking at? Multiple radio stations around the world. So amazingly, everybody dialed in at a certain amount of time and said, "We're running this song right here, right now. So here you go." And that's how they did it.
Yep. And I found it interesting. It was also the first song since the Beatles' Let It Be that entered the Billboard Top 5 within 2 weeks of release.
Nice.
And I was like,
that's pretty crazy.
Big, yeah, that's big.
Is this right? The estimated global sales of We Are the World are said to be at 20 million, which I think in 1985, that is a shit ton of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So $20 million went to the aid of African famine relief. So
now, was that just the single, or was that the whole album as a whole?
It just says global, so I'm not sure. The estimated global sales of We Are the World is said to be 20 million, so it could have been both.
And as much as I hate to admit it, I've never heard another song off the album except We Are the World.
Was there an entire album?
I believe so. Prince did the B-side, another song on the
one called Grace. The vinyl single, We Are the World, and then the other side was Grace. It says Quincy Jones.
Yeah. He did something. I know he did a song that wasn't We Are the World.
Gotcha.
To what I understood. I believe it was a whole album.
Gotcha.
I believe. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe. Maybe you're not. Who knows?
I've been wrong on this podcast many times.
And we'll be wrong again many more.
Many more. That's why we always tell you, and we tell you what we watch and what we...
Yeah.
That way you can go back and you can watch it and you can say, you know, they forgot to say that.
Yeah. You idiots. Come on. Get your shit together. That's funny. But yeah, so there you go. It's kind of the breakdown. I do want to say that, you know, this took all night. So... they all left the AMAs, and, you know, all these artists go there. They all kind of meet each other. Some of them knew each other for a long time. Some of them were meeting other, you know, some of their idols for the first time, or, you know, people that they respect, or, you know, whatever of, you know, whatever that is. But it was interesting, you know, as the time, they kind of kept going back to the clock. And it was, 8 o'clock in the morning when everybody was finally out of the studio. And there was there was things in this that I related to, but nothing more. I related to nothing even more than when they walked out of that studio and it was daylight. And we talked about this just a little bit ago with, you know, me and Brad would come in, nothing on paper, nothing, and we would write a song. And a lot of the times, it would almost be daylight by the time we walked out of the studio because we were, you know, we were in a zone, we were on it. Yeah. And I was thinking about that today while I was thinking about this song and doing this pod. Mm-hmm. And I just thought about Jane and, you know, Brad's wife and their daughter. They started driving separately because they know we would be late. But there was times where they didn't, and you walk in and everybody's asleep on the couch and you got to wake everybody up and send them all home. But just the idea of walking out of that studio at 8 a.m. with the sunshine and knowing that you'd been in there all night. And Springsteen's was kind of the last thing they recorded, kind of some of the offsets of the chorus. And he talked about, you know, he had flown in from, was he in Philadelphia?
I believe he was in Philly, yeah. Okay. Or somewhere out there doing the, like, final concert of the tour.
Philly or New Jersey or
something like that.
So he talked about, you know, he had basically finished his concert and then flew in so he could be there. And, I guess it was the next day, but he'd been on tour that whole entire time. That dude was spent. And here he was up all night in a recording studio trying to get that last little piece, that last little, man, I know exactly what that's like, you know, recording all night and your voice.
That's a musician, you know, they don't want it not to be perfect to their.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, they were all tired. Diana Ross, the only one that was like, I wish it wasn't over.
Yeah, she's like, I don't want anybody to leave. I'm over here crying.
But, you know, the part I found pretty cool was there was a point kind of in the middle somewhere where I don't know if they were taking a break. And one of the younger acts went over to one of the more veteran acts and asked for an autograph.
Yeah,
and that started a whole thing of everybody signing each other's.
Yep. And that's where Sheila E. come in. It's like, and then they come over and ask for my autograph, and I'm like, I'm a nobody, you know, pretty much. You want my autograph? And then, boom, they started with the video of just everybody signing their sheet music and stuff like that.
What would you give for a copy of one of those things of music?
Autographed. I imagine that thing. Well, think of the legends that are on that. That are even no longer with us. Kenny Rogers, Michael Jackson. Is Ray gone?
Ray's gone.
Ray's gone. Sorry, I don't know that for sure. I didn't want to step on toes.
He's gone.
You know, I'm just looking over. I think Dionne Warwick's gone too, isn't she?
No, she was on the...
Oh, she was. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was.
But,
I mean, just an amazing amount of people that were there and made those signatures that are no longer around. So, yeah, I mean... That sheet music has got to be invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
And let alone the USA for Africa sign that they had hanging, that they had everybody sign when they left. So,
Yeah,
pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Pretty amazing. What was it? What was the documentary called?
The Greatest Night in Pop.
Yep. There you go. Go check it out. It's on Netflix. It's kind of come up as new to Netflix or whatever. Yeah. And you should definitely go check it out because it is. It was. I couldn't stop watching it. I had to watch it the whole way through. So
that's what I told him. I go, it's very well worth the watch.
Right.
And I will say that to y'all too. Go watch it. Check it out.
Most definitely. Because then once you watch the documentary, you'll have to go watch the video on YouTube also. Because that's what I did. I'm like, I got to watch the video because they show all the shooting, you know, all the cameramen and all that stuff. All those guys are putting in all that work to get that on video. Mm-hmm. They show it and it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
You know, and then I kind of went and I listened to went on like YouTube and stuff like that. And I found different versions of the song that people have done. And
oh, right.
Like a lot of like, well, I don't know what they call it in school, kind of like the show choir. For us, it would have been the Triton Singers, the Montana and Josh Rent. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen a lot of different groups like that doing it. I've seen what are they called? The real hard rock where you can't understand the lyrics.
Yeah. Like screamo.
Yeah. I heard a version. Yeah.
I blow my voice out trying to do that.
Yeah, but it did not sound like We Are the World.
No, definitely.
And now I personally, and I know I will probably get flack for this, but I thought USA for Haiti was better than USA for Africa, in my opinion. But
I'm going to definitely have to go check that out because I don't know that I know that one. But I did just throw my voice out trying to do that. Sorry about that. That's terrible.
No. You all right?
I think I'll survive.
Okay. But yeah, there's all sorts of different, you know, versions of people singing the song. So it's out there. It's kind of kind of a big thing, I guess.
Absolutely.
Know?
Definitely need to go check it out. It's a good time. The Netflix documentary is mm-hmm. off the hook. So go check it out. All right, Frankie, we need to get going.
Yes, we do.
We hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We really enjoyed digging into this one and just seeing all of our favorite artists from back in the day. Give us a shout out, thegoldenimage80s@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. If you enjoyed this episode or enjoyed the We Are the World deal, back in the day, let us know. We want to know what your thoughts and processes and on that. So thegoldenimage80s@gmail.com. Also go check out Golden Mojo ENT, where you can find all of your Golden 80s merchandise and also from around the Golden Mojo Empire, which include the Call Guys, Golden Image Podcast, United States of Paranormal, Indiana Chiefs Fans, Murd Nerds, and, you know, the Quarter Books and Booze stuff is still on there, too. So you might want a sweatshirt that says, read with you later.
Yeah.
You never know.
I still think it's going to come back.
You never know. All right. Until next week, hasta la vista, baby.
See ya.